So good evening, welcome everybody to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the football pod that gives real fans a real voice.
I think Man United need to look at themselves. If they get their house in order, they have the resources, the facilities and the infrastructure to compete with City, regardless of whether Guardiola is there or not.
I'm not a massive side of Berahino fan, right? But the thing that annoys me, and it's not just West Brom, it's the way the media have talked about him. Like, oh, if a club get him, do they really want him in the dressing room?
They've made a point already. They've made a point not just to teams like West Brom, but they've made a point to even the likes of Liverpool, Spurs, Everton, all of those clubs who have said for years, oh, we just can't compete with the top four. We just can't. We need more money.
It's very simple. I throw in subject matters around the sport that we love, and my guests in exchange give me their honest, brutal opinions on the subject that we're about to discuss. My name is Jordan. I'm going to announce my panel today. This week we're joined by Gabriel, our Chelsea fan, Tottenham fan Ollie, and Manchester United supporter Marvin. How are we doing today, gentlemen?
Very good. Well,
you're good, Jordan.
Yep.
Good.
I'm
good.
All right, man.
No, you're all right. Join in on the fun. Tweet us any questions, any comments via our Twitter, FFP_11. And subscribe and join in on the fun also via the iTunes Library Football Fans Podcast. And share that bad boy. Right, so let's kick off, guys, with some very quick drive-bys. Gabriel, begin with you. We all saw the scenes at Anfield on Saturday with a large portion of the Liverpool fans leaving the stadium on 77 minutes in protest against the rising of some of their tickets that kick in, I believe, next season. Yeah. I think they reported almost a third of the fans left, like around 10,000 fans left the ground. The other remaining 20-odd thousand fans that didn't leave, should they be ashamed of themselves?
No, not at all. I mean, it's funny when you go to football because there's always a fan who thinks they're better than you. You know, the season ticket holders think they're better than the members. The away season ticket holders think they're better than the home season ticket holders. And the guy who's been going for 70 years thinks he's better than the guy who's been going for 50 years. For me, it might, you know, at the end of the day, £77 is going up to is quite expensive, but whoever's paid their money has probably paid a lot of money to go in there as well. I guess the regulars might feel, you know, we're going to come back next week, let's make a stand. But the other fans, that might be their day out. That might be the one time they get there. And they actually might as well think that leaving might harm the team. And I don't know whether it did or it didn't, but it didn't get the result. So overall, I wouldn't say the other fans should be ashamed of themselves. Fans have the right to protest. Some chose not to, and they can stay and watch the game.
But isn't if they all join forces and leave as one, there's a bigger picture than just a 2-0 lead against Sunderland. The bigger picture is if you don't make a stand now, we're all going to be affected worse off in the long run.
But what if they don't disagree with the prices? I mean, if you look at Premiership as a whole, 77 as a top price, it's not all that ridiculous. And I think when you put £77 in the mixer, it does sound a lot. But if you're saying that's a top price for a top game at a club like Liverpool as well, is it that ridiculous? I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm sure there'll be scousers ready for my blood after me saying that. But, you know, I think it's a debate to be had. I don't think it's the most ridiculous price I've ever heard of, especially if you look at like Arsenal and Tottenham and stuff
well,
like that.
Well, we're going to have that debate next week in a wider context because there's so many things I want to talk about regarding what the implications wider beyond Liverpool could be for this. And I want to get our Liverpool regular, Stephen, on next week because I know he's got some thoughts. And Natasha, obviously Arsenal fan, we pay the most in the league or in Europe, I think, as well. So we're going to come back to that.
You get the most trophies as well, though.
Well, that's the backdrop of it, isn't it? We don't mind paying a lot of money, but give us something for our money, sort of thing. And also Tottenham, you guys are going to get an increase, I'm assuming, with the new stadium the next couple of years as well. So
yeah,
interested to
definitely.
Hear what Tottenham fans think about that as well. All right, Marvin, I'm deliberately asking you this question and not Ollie. There's a reason for this as well. Much of the attention this season has been on Leicester City, and rightly so for obvious reasons. A large portion has been focused on Arsenal because many people deem that this is their best chance of winning the Premier League in a long time. And obviously City are getting a lot of attention because they should win the league with the best team in the league. Is this Tottenham Hotspur's the best way for them to win the Premier League this season? And do you know what I mean? If all the attention's on the other three teams and they're being very consistent, just quietly winning their games, going about their business, is that the best way for them to win the Premier League this season?
Well, I think we talked about it before that if Tottenham start to believe their own hype, then there is a risk that they'll capitulate, right? I think that's been mentioned on pods before. I mean, I don't agree, Jordan. I think at the end of the day, right, this is a topsy-turvy season, right? You've got Chelsea who are top of the bottom half.
Thanks for reminding us.
I don't even know if they are top of the bottom half. I think they're like...
Stop looking now.
Yeah. You've got United who are, struggling week to week. You got Leicester going to places like City and battering them. So I think, as I'm comfortable in saying, the team who wins it this year is the team that deserves it. This whole talk about, oh, because the focus is on Arsenal and this is the best chance. Like, it's not Arsenal's fault that Chelsea and United aren't doing it, right? Yeah, you got to win your games. And at the end of the day, that's why people talk about the league being a marathon, not a sprint. So if Spurs win it, they've deserved it. I don't think it's the best chance because focus is elsewhere. They're just winning the games in front of them and not making much noise. It's the same thing with Ranieri. I love the way people keep saying, you know what, you're going to win the league now. You're going to win the league now. And he's just like, look, we're doing day to day. The target was 40 points. Now we got to build on that. Like, a bit of humble goes a long way. It's good to keep people focused and just taking game by game. I think the issue is that City can't do that because of the amount of money, because of the quality of players. And everyone likes to take the piss out of Arsenal, right? I mean, I think the reason why people are saying it's Arsenal's best chance is because there is no Chelsea-Manchester United equation. It's like, when are Arsenal going to step up? Is it when there is none of the previous top four in the mix? And it's just like Leicester and Palace who are having a worldy season. Like, when is there going to be an opportunity? But in answer to your question, if Spurs win it, they deserve it. I think they're putting... I know it's going to drain their resources financially with the new ground, but I think Pochettino's putting an infrastructure that doesn't mean this is like a one-time-only thing. I think they'll be in the mix again next season, providing they can hold on to their talent and acquire where they need to.
Okay, all right, nice one. And Ollie, bearing in mind the political and economic power that China will be kind of amassing in the next decade or so. It's a two-part question here. Should we expect more and more top players fleeing to that part of the world to play their football? And B, should we expect more and more players that may have gone to a Barca, Real, United and Arsenal, top European teams, now going to the Chinese league because the money is so strong? So players that are in their mid-20s that are prospects of going to a big team, should we be surprised if one of those players actually turns down a Barcelona for a triple contract offer in China?
Well, it's a hard one to turn down, really. When you see the money that's on offer, it's incredible what they're throwing around. I mean, the latest one today we've heard is about Paye being offered by an unnamed Chinese club. You kind of wonder whether it's true or whether it's just his agent trying to talk it up and get him more money from West Ham. But when you're talking about the kind of money that they're dealing with, £135,000 a week, that'd turn anyone's head. But what I think is happening, and what I'm not sure if those top players that you're talking about will end up going to China rather than going to Barcelona or Real Madrid. I think the sort of players that we're dealing with here are the sort of players who normally go to Shakhtar, who normally go to, you know, go and play in the cold climates somewhere out in Moscow, wherever, you know, and those sort of Brazilians who will go straight to the leagues on the other side of Europe. They probably end up going straight to China now instead of even going through Shakhtar or going to Spartak Moscow or whatever, because those clubs have always had their fair share of Brazilians, haven't they? So maybe those players will go there. And yeah, I think that China is something that you can say in the next few years, if everything is to be believed about the president being into football and wanting Chinese football to be big and the fact that they want to get a World Cup, they're going to go hard on it. So I think you're going to be seeing more and more players ending up in China. The only thing I'm disappointed with is that what happened with Paulinho? If Chelsea can get 25 million for Ramirez and Ramirez isn't getting a game at Chelsea, what happens? Daniel Levy's supposed to be the greatest businessman in the Premier League.
What did he go for?
I think it was something like 9 million or something like that. He's been mugged, man. He's been absolutely mugged. Because I'm looking at the figures going, Alec Teixeira going the other day for 38 million. I'm thinking, What happened with Paulinho? I know he didn't do it at Spurs, but geez,
just happened,
man.
Isn't it? Huh? I think if Paulinho went now,
12 months later even,
he would get more cash, but the revolution is just happening. I guess my question is, you guys might be able to help me, yeah, but if I'm in the Chinese league and I win it, what's the competition? Because all of these guys are saying, I'm willing not to play Champions League. And for me, that's the draw, right? If you're going to move and you're considered a fairly decent player in terms of standard, then you get to play Champions League. There ain't no Champions League out there. I'm old school, right? Like, I know people got mouths to feed and all this malarkey, but it's a big undertaking to go out there just
I think
for
they've
the
got their eight. I know it's nothing like the Champions League, Marv.
They got their equivalent,
but they've got
there.
Their equivalent for Asia, haven't they? But it's nothing like it's nothing
but
like
what
the
I'm
Champions
thinking
League.
Is that should we expect to see, whereas with the MLS you kind of tend to see the 31 pluses kind of go over there for their last kind of chance, are we going to see like players in their prime going to China?
Yeah. I think, as I said, I think that what you'll get now is, instead of those players who go straight from Brazil to Shakhtar,
no, but even from the European leagues,
I'm not sure about that.
You're not going to see a Prem player.
I'm not sure.
Sure, because the money they're throwing, as Oli said there, it'll make anybody's head
but
like,
I think the word
Champions League, or be a multimillionaire many times over.
I think the ambiguity of it is when you say a player in his prime. Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, if Graben went there, right, you think fair play to you, mate, get that money, you know what I mean? But then if I don't know, if Dele Alli decided to go there like a young hot prospect, then we'd sit up and take notice. So it's prime is an ambiguous
fair
term.
Point. All right, and just another very quick one for you, Ollie, as well. I know the transfer window has been closed a couple of weeks now. We didn't mention it last week, but it was a bit of a damn squid again, the January window. Lots of nobodies coming into the Premier League from the list that I saw. And even people like Pato and Shelvey and El Nene, Graben, Corker and Fur. These are desperate signings that wouldn't have been made in the summer.
I like Shelvey, and I don't know why you're so
maybe it's just me.
Him.
Sorry, yeah, maybe I'm the only person that likes Shelvey. Okay,
still a lot of money, 12 million.
It's a lot of money. There were a few good ones, Afobe, Austin, Adebayor, Naismith. I thought were good deals. But do you feel, because I'm asking you, because your team, actually, I'm Marvin, didn't make any signings in the January window. Do you feel sometimes it's better to make any signing than no signing at all?
I've been re-educated. I've had my mind turned by Pochettino now, and I'm fully down with the approach that only sign someone when you've got the right player that you want to get, because otherwise you're just wasting your time. And Spurs have done that so often in the past that it's not worth it, is it? So I don't think you should sign under any circumstances. I think you wait for the right player. The problem is that it's just so hard to find a good striker at the moment, for instance. You know, there's not that many great strikers out there, and you have to look at, what you've really got to look at is trying to get players that you can, you know, you can develop, essentially. And I think that's the way forward, that you get in,
make your own.
Yeah, you make your own. You get a Dele Alli, or you get, you know, you get someone that you can bring into the club, and you can say, right, you know, United bought Luke Shaw or whatever, knowing full well, yeah, they've paid over the price. But at the end of the day, Luke Shaw, unfortunately, just when he looked like he was starting to get going, he got injured, which is a shame for him, because he looked like he was on the way to having a really good season.
He was coming on, yeah. All right, guys, let's kick into the first debate of the pod now. I'm going to start with Leicester. Beat Manchester City over the weekend, and quite easily, I felt as well. Before I get into the main question of what I want to ask you guys, first of all, one word answer. Do we feel, because everyone's saying, oh, Leicester can win the league. For me, the question now needs to not be, can Leicester win the league anymore? We're surely now past that. It's now, will they win the league? I think it's a bit disrespectful to still be asking the question. Of course they can win the league. There's about eight teams that can win the league technically still. But I want to know from you guys, one word answer, will Leicester win the league this season? Start with you, Gabriel.
No, but Ollie? Very cautious, no.
Oli?
No.
Marvin?
No.
Okay. And Marvin, you spoke about 2 months ago, we did Leicester about a couple of months back, maybe 6 weeks back, and you weren't convinced by Leicester then. You wasn't really having them. You weren't taking them serious as title contenders. Mm. 2 months later, have you changed your mind?
I think I've got to, Jord. I mean, when you can go to City and pack them out 3-0, right? It's a serious statement. And I think we've mentioned it over the last few weeks, where we've talked about the fact that the difference between Leicester and everyone else in that mix, probably excluding Tottenham, is the fact the football is fearless. They have, some would say, they've got one way to play and are playing that way. whereas the other managers and the other teams are thinking of how they can contain their opponent. Leicester are just thinking, look, we'll do our best defensively, but our way is the counter-attack to use the pace of people like Mahrez and Vardy, and they're getting it done. So it's a two-part answer. I'm still not having it. I still just think, you know what, this is the Prem, right? And regardless of how people perform, as long as it's mathematically possible that an Arsenal or a City can catch them, you ask me to put my money down, that's where I'm going to put the cash on them being caught.
Okay.
And I think, you know, if they, you know, I still have this niggling feeling that if a couple of results go badly, that the wheels could fall off.
Mm.
But hey, I'm loving their football. I'm enjoying watching them. All the best to them. It's quite clear that Manchester United aren't going to win the league. And if you said to me, I think they're everybody's number two, you know, because I don't know any Leicester fans. So, you know, if they win it, I'll clap. But no one's going to come to my door, ring my phone, tweet me anything offensive. So I'm still not having that they're going to win the league, but I'll be delighted if they do.
Okay, so let me ask the main question that I want to get into. Start with you, Gabriel. I mean, everyone I think knows now how Leicester play. I think we now have worked out how Leicester City play their football and how they're winning their games. But why is no one able to stop it? Why has no one worked out how to stop? How do you beat Leicester City?
Yeah, it's...
What else can the Chelsea fan for? They got packed.
Well, I'm not asking to be fair, but I just, you know... Yeah. I thought I'd just start with
you. Did you beat them off?
Oh, we did get packed out.
Did you beat them?
No, we didn't, but I'm just saying this. Like,
we lost 2-1.
I'm just saying.
And it is funny because, you know, you could argue that that match effectively lost Mourinho his job. Louis van Gaal took a lot of stick over it. And they both said after...
Mourinho lost Mourinho his job.
Well... Yeah, the players.
I just meant what he said after the game. When he said you're not going to finish in the top four, I think that was like that was Bramwich just thinking you got to go.
You know, Gabe doesn't blame Mourinho.
It's an old debate. It's an old debate.
Slap Gabe's face, and Gabe would be like, "Yeah, my face was in the wrong place." He ain't gonna go against him.
But if you go back to both of those games and you know comments after the game by Mourinho and Louis van Gaal, they've both said that we've told our defenders what they're going to do and they still haven't been able to stop it. Now, is it because defending has got worse in the Premier? We talked about this last week and I think to an extent it has. Or is it because Leicester are just so effective at what they do? But it's strange because I don't feel like this isn't something that we've never seen before. Maybe something that just hasn't been in the Premiership for a long while and it's taken people by surprise. And if you look at it as well, I mean, Man City over the weekend were effectively done by set pieces. And I guess City defensively have been quite poor overall. So you look at the way Leicester have played, it's been a lot about kind of the long ball up to Vardy, but they were very effective with set pieces. I actually didn't realise they were so effective with set pieces until I saw them against City as well. So I think why Leicester are doing so well is because they're doing a lot of basics things really well and maybe things that people aren't used to seeing in the Premiership on a regular basis.
Ollie, you're tomorrow appointed the manager of Arsenal. You're the new Arsenal manager, yeah.
I can't believe you said you got him
on Saturday. How do you beat Leicester on Saturday? How do teams now, because you know how they play, you know their strengths, you know what they're all about. How do you beat them though? Because one thing knowing how they play, but beat them is something different. How do you do it?
Well, there's no one thing, as you probably know, Jordan. There's loads of different variables with Leicester. A, you've got to defend well, and B, you've got to make sure, as Gabe was just saying, that you're kind of, you know, you're fully clued up about how they play the set pieces. And when you look at the goal that Robert Hoof scored against Spurs, and he scored exactly identical goal against Manchester City. I mean, it's like Manchester City didn't even watch that. I don't even think that you should look at that game against Man City. Were absolutely appalling. I can't believe they approached that game in that manner. I can't believe that they actually thought. I think they thought that Leicester
Man City, we're better than them. We'll be around we haven't got to do any homework.
It's almost like the Liverpool game didn't happen where they got completely humiliated against Liverpool. It's almost like the game didn't happen. They've gone in against Leicester and it's like, we can just play our way and it doesn't matter. So the first things first, you've got to respect Leicester as a team who can beat you. And, you know, this is one of the things that I'm not always convinced that Wenger is a great respecter of teams who he thinks should be lower down the table. So if you're going into this game as the Arsenal manager...
He's been sacked, you're the boss now.
I'm saying, first off, you've got to do your homework, and you've got to respect that Leicester can beat you, and they are a team who need to be taken seriously. So, and I still think there's a lot of managers of top clubs who don't take them seriously, and a lot of players who don't take them seriously, which is why you get what Gabe was saying a minute ago with managers saying, "I told them what they had to do, and they've not paid attention." Because I just think there's a lot of top players who are still probably thinking, they can't do me. I can't get done by Leicester. And the thing is that they're getting, time and time again, Leicester are showing people up. But yeah, I think that the set pieces, Robert Hoof, make sure that you're alive when he's, you know, when they basically make space for him to get a free header in. You've got to be aware about that. You've obviously got to be aware of Vardy over the top. The thing is with that goal as well against Liverpool is that Mahrez didn't even look where Vardy was. When he picked up the ball and knocked it over the top,
he knew where to put it.
He already knew he barely looked up and saw. He just hit it.
Do you
straight
think that,
first
do you think
time
that was more to do with the fact of he just got an intuition with Vardy and he knew roughly where it'd be?
I think,
or
so.
He knew that Liverpool left back, he's not on it.
I think
he's not
on
it.
I think
I can put it there.
I think they've got it worked out exactly where he's going to be. They obviously know where the weaknesses are in opposition sides, and they play on it. So they probably knew that, you know, Vardy's going to be working on beating a particular player, and you know, he's put it into an area that he expected Vardy to be in, and that's what you expect good sides to do. But I also think, finally, that the other thing is that a lot of teams don't do against Leicester is, and I've wondered why no one does this, is to match them up. I don't know why no one goes 4-4-2. I know Klopp did it and he won. He won the game at home, and to be fair, Liverpool didn't play badly at the King Power. But they just got done by the ball over the top by Vardy, didn't they? But I just wonder if more teams should be thinking about, well, actually, if we match them up and we go two up top, will their two centre-halves be able to deal with a dual threat rather than just one man up top that they can easily marshal? You know what I mean?
Marvin, have they secured top four for you? Are they definitely Champions League next season?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no.
Because of Saturday, or do you think even before Saturday they were top four?
Well, I think it's a numbers game, right? United are now, 6 points off it, right?
Forget about United, Marv. Not in the race.
Well, why are you asking me to forget about Man United are fifth, right? So, as things currently stand, if one of the top four drop out, you're a good mathematician. I know you can do it. We went to school together. They are the next in line as things currently stand. I looked at the league before today and I realised that we're fifth. So, going back to Jordan's question, is that okay with you? You keep going with me for it. Going back to Jordan's question, if Leicester don't get top four, as things currently stand, and I'm conscious of the fact, we're talking in real time right now, United are next in line. As a result, there's a 6-point gap between United and City. There's a further 6-7 points between them and Leicester. So I just,
no, between them and Spurs and Arsenal.
Gosh, it's embarrassing. so yeah, I'd have to say, as things currently stand, they're going to get Champions League, which is okay, right? I think it would be so sad with everything Leicester have done. If they got fifth, I think it'd be a disappointment. They're leading the Premiership, just the most expensive league in the world, Jordan. And they've spent next to nothing, right? I think Champions League's the least that the Prem could give them. Could I just say something about Ollie? Like, he was talking about, I think he's 100% right. I think players underestimate Leicester. And when Van Gaal was having a go, he was talking about people like Blind and Smalling, right, that were up. I think there is a way to play against Leicester, right? And I think it's, Ollie's right, I think it's matching them up. I think it's exploiting the wings as well. Like, I think Drinkwater and Kante are quite solid in the middle and they can stifle out any creative flair there. But it's also about playing a bit deep, right? Mm. People are still playing a high line that Vardy can run into. They're still leaving one at the back with Vardy alone instead of doing like a centre-back.
I think he's
back
laughing, thinking, we're into February, no one's worked out.
Yeah.
I'm quicker than most centre-backs. If you push up, I'm going to beat you in a foot race.
And the thing is, Leicester aren't a pressure team, right? I feel like if you sat back and said, play us, I think they wouldn't, you know, I don't think they'd carve one of a respectively big team. So I just think playing a bit deep and, you know, your set plays, all right, usually it's, I don't know, let's say for argument's sake, usually it's Damian that stays back on the corner. Just drop Blind in there or drop Smalling and say, all right, you know, Smalling's is lethal in the air from a corner, but he ain't banging them in. Let's just, for the Leicester game, let's just sit him back and have him deal with it. No one does it. And it's totally underestimating Vardy. They're thinking this guy was playing at Fleetwood Town with a tag. You know, everybody stood with their dog. You didn't have to pay for parking to go and watch him. And he's now the Prem. He can't deal with me. You get me? I've gone through every elite academy Europe has to offer. And it's naive.
Well, he signed an 80 grand a week contract just last week.
Forget about contracts. I've got no time for contracts.
Well, no, I was going to ask. I mean, having signed that contract, I know that, again, a couple of months ago, you weren't really having him then. Do you feel that he is a top Premier League striker now, or just having a phenomenal 12-month run?
I mean, the bottom line is, and I might get stick for this, the bottom line is, United aren't blessed with strikers. So the question is, if he's a top striker, would I want him at United? And the answer is no, right? He's given me one solid season. It's the same thing we did about Kane, and fair play to Kane. Kane's now doing it consistently. If we're having this conversation this time next year and Vardy's banging another 20-odd goals, then maybe I'll change my mind.
Okay.
But I tell you what, if news broke tomorrow and we were paying 30 million for Vardy, I'm going to lose my shit.
You're upset.
Yeah,
okay.
Simple as that. And 80 grand, you know what? I just think they're saying, you've been stellar. You deserve this cash. And if somebody is going to come in, then we're going to make sure we get your value for you. So you collect your paycheck now and we'll deal with it. I mean, 80 grand, I mean, Leicester aren't poor just from a financial and based on their performance, if they get Champions League, there's more cash to come. For
Finally, very briefly, G, watching that game on Saturday, one thing that definitely stuck out to me was the difference in fitness levels. Man City just looked like they were just slow, and Leicester looked like they were zippy. Now that might just be form, and Leicester are buzzing at the moment.
Yeah.
But do you feel that generally fitness trumps technique?
I think there has been a trend of that this season. And I wouldn't say it trumps technique, but what I'd say is the difference in technique between the top four and the rest of the teams is really come down. So 5-6 years ago, you had Ronaldo, who was technically way above anything else. Now you've got, if you say last season, Hazard was the best player. Hazard's clearly better than Mahrez. But is he that much better than Mahrez to the extent that Ronaldo was better than the next best player? No. So then you get that the technique is not as, you know, the gap between the technique is not that great. And then you've got these players who will work hard, and every single game is a battle. And I think that's what some of the top players are finding difficult for. But also with City, I'm not so sure for me whether it's so much that they're unfit. I just think they are, I think they're a bit lazy. There is a bit of a lazy culture in Man City that Guardiola will have to deal with. And I think it comes from things like letting Yaya Toure get away with being lazy or appearing to be lazy for the last 3-4 years.
Okay. All right. I don't want to sound like a hater though, yeah, but Europe takes its toll on people. Do you know what I mean? When you're getting back at stupid o'clock and all that stuff, Leicester haven't had to deal with any of that.
Mm.
And it will be interesting to see if they do get Champions League or finish in Europa, whether these miraculous fitness levels are as phenomenal as people think they are. But I agree with G. I mean, I said it before, right? City, like Pellegrini's a lame duck, right? Mm. So win it or not, they know he's gone. Yaya doesn't only know that Pellegrini's gone, but he knows Pep don't fancy him. So he's leaving the club at the end of the summer. So I think it's a bit of a, look, this is a substitute teacher here, right? So
Do the bare minimum.
Yeah, he ain't going to have a say on my contract in the summer. So, you know what
Whatever.
I mean?
Interesting that Yaya's been subbed, I think, in the last 4 games as well. It's quite significant. He was never getting subbed. Even when he should have been getting subbed, he wasn't. But the last 4 games, he's been subbed. It's probably quite a significant sign.
You also said Adebayor was a good signing. Do you really believe that?
I think it's an astute signing because he's free. He's a man that likes to start well. So they only need him to score 8 goals between now and May. He can score 8 goals. Bearing in mind the strikers they had are scoring no goals. He's an upgrade.
He's better than all they've got there.
He's better than what they've got, so he's an upgrade.
He's another lame striker.
He's a lame striker when he's comfortable.
They've got another lame striker on their books now.
I mean, Jordan Rhodes has gone. Is he going to Borough?
He's gone to Borough, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie Austin went for $4 million. Like, you're saying he's better than what they got, but I think there was better available.
Well, Rhodes has not proven in the Premier League.
He's not proven, but I would take Rhodes over Adebayor.
I don't know. For free, I wouldn't. Rhodes was 12 million, 11 million?
I'd still take him. I mean, we're talking about mentalities here, right? And I don't want to make this into a racial thing, but Palace have a lot of young, impressionable London black boys who are, and I'm using Zaha as an example here, as a bit a bit of a, I think they used to call Micah Richards, yeah, Baby Bentley, where they just need, you know, somebody like a Scott Dan or a Dempsey to
put
really
him down.
Keep, yeah. And Adebayo's going to roll in there. There's probably people throwing rose petals at his feet. Do you know what I mean? I'm just not sure he's going to have not only the right impact on the pitch, but off it, is what I'm saying.
Okay. We'll keep an eye on him, see how he gets on. Moving on, guys, to our next subject. I want to talk about West Brom. And effectively, some of you, Ollie, ask, are they the most non-progressive football team in the Premier League? And what I mean by that is, they've been back in the Prem now 5-6 years now, I think. They've been back in the Premier League. I don't know what they're about. I don't know what the point of West Brom is. They don't play good football. They don't bring through any of their own people. What are they about? What is the point of West Bromwich Albion? With all due respect to any West Brom fans listening. I've just written your cub off there. But I don't see what the point. At least other teams that are struggling, I can see what they're trying to do and where they're trying to go. Palace have overtaken them. Bournemouth, you can see in a year or two. Do you understand? Overtaking someone like West Brom. What are they about?
Well, I think that what Leicester are doing at the moment,
Leicester as well,
basically putting pressure on a lot of these clubs. I said this ages ago when it was kind of when Leicester started on this amazing kind of rise that they're on now. But they're putting pressure on all of those clubs that essentially have said for years, you've just got to fight. It's a battle. You've just got to survive in the Premier League, no matter how you do it. Nice mid-table finish. You know, keep the money rolling in. Everyone's happy. That's what all these fans have been sold. Now, all of a sudden, Leicester have come through, nearly got relegated last season, and now they're top of the league. And whether they win the league or not, I mean, everyone's jumping on the Leicester bandwagon. Oh, wouldn't it be great if Leicester... The fact is,
They've won already almost.
They've won
they?
Already. People keep going on about, oh yeah, it'd be great if Leicester win it. Oh, I wish Leicester will win it. They've made a point already. They've made a point not just to teams like West Brom, but they've made a point to even the likes of Liverpool, Spurs, Everton, all of those clubs who have said for years, oh, we just can't compete with the top four. We just can't. We need more money. We need new stadiums, all this sort of stuff. I just don't think that, and I think that, as I say, West Brom have essentially found themselves in a situation where they're being made to look bad. And yeah, you know, they've chosen the wrong managers over time, I think, as well. They're in a situation where they've got Pulis there, and you know what Pulis is going to do. He's going to guarantee you safety, a bit like Sam Allardyce does, but there's going to be no frills there. There's going to be no interest. And, you know, you said that they don't bring through players, but they do. They bring through, Berahino's come from their, you know, from their stock. And I suppose, in a way, with Berahino, why can't West Brom do what Leicester are doing with Vardy? He could be their man up top, scoring loads of goals. You know, a goal poacher. He loves putting the ball in the net. He could be their man up top. They could get a system going with the right manager. But I think over time, they haven't employed the right manager. And I think Jeremy Peace has been a bit too... He's been a bit too ruthless, I think, because he gets managers in and then sacks them. So Steve Clark was in for a little while. I thought he was doing a decent job, and then he sacked. You know, they've sacked quite a lot of managers in this whole thing of, we've got to stay in the Prem. We can't, any drop in their position.
It's you're like, out.
Got, yeah. You're out. You've got to get the next man in. And I don't think that's a good way to go either. But I just generally think with West Brom that, yeah, I think there's a issue where they need to be a bit more ambitious. But how do you go about being ambitious? Because they've always gone for the... I think they've been more comfortable going for the kind of British manager who they can work with, whereas Leicester have taken a risk on Ranieri, and we all hold our hands up now and think, well, you know, remember what we said at the start of the season. But Ranieri's come good for them. But whereas West Brom have stayed safe with the Gary Megsons and the sort of, you know, and the Tony Pulis type people, and these sort of people who would do a decent job, but there's not going to be much excitement.
Well, Gabriel, Ollie mentions Tony Pulis there. When you employ someone like Tony Pulis, aren't you effectively raising the white flag and saying, look, we're showing no ambition here. We don't even want to try and be a top eight team. We just want to stay in the league, a nice top 12, you know, be solid, a few clean sheets. You know, we don't care how you get the wins. You're effectively saying to your fans, we're not trying to do anything special. As opposed to someone like Alan Pardew, for example, that might get you relegated, but he might get you top six as well. Wouldn't, from a fan's point of view, that sort of appointment show that your club are at least trying to do something, go somewhere and progress as a football club?
Yeah, I think if you ask the hierarchy at West Brom, what they would say was that we went up and down and up and down for years on the bounce and they just wanted to stabilise. I do see what you're saying about Pulis. I guess if he was sitting here, I can imagine what he would say. He would say that, you know, we are 15th, 16th in the league. We spend the 15th or 16th higher amount of money because Pulis always seems to know the accounts for every club across the country. But yeah, I do see that to an point, and that, you know, it's the reason why Stoke got rid of Pulis or Bolton, you know, parted ways with Allardyce.
Because at a certain point,
you want to kick on. Yeah, it must be difficult to be a West Brom fan for that, because you just think, what have you got to look forward to? You know, you might have like the big four coming, and you might, you know, you might get one win out of those games, but you've got nothing really to aim for. And in some ways, you hear some fans say it, you always think it's weird. It might actually be more exciting to go down and come back up rather than just be in that malaise.
15th every season.
16th every season. Yeah.
All right. And Marvin, we'll talk about Berahino as well. How do you feel that they've handled the whole situation in regards to effectively blocking him from leaving the football club and pricing him out of the market? Or do you feel, look, he's contracted to them, he's their employee, they're within their rights to do whatever the hell they want?
You know what? Can I just also say that, yeah, I disagree with Gabe and Ollie on the West Brom thing, right? Because I remember, because they're near my house, and maybe I should have supported them, I don't know. But it was the same thing with Charlton, right? Like, the Charlton fans kept going on, yeah, we need to kick on, blah, blah, blah. Kerbishley's never going to do it, da, 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 da. Look at Charlton now, right? That's my first point. The second point, I think progressive, again, is one of those terms, Joe, because in the last 6-7 years, they've gone up. I think they either won the league or went up through playoffs or came second. They've stayed up. Now is not the time to be dicing with risk. The Premiership is getting some big cash. Maybe you can take risk when that cash comes in, but now you just need to stay in the league, right? And Tony Pulis is going to do that. Second of all, I think they finished 17th, they finished 8th, they finished 10th. They're bouncing. They're making, for me, you said non-progressive. I mean, Arsenal finished third, fourth for the last 11 years. That's not progress. What if you ask me who's more non-progressive on where they are, I'd say Arsenal are, right? Because West Brom have finished higher than 17th. They finished higher than 15th. I think their highest league finish in the last 5 years is 8th, right? Arsenal finished third and fourth all the time. They're not progressing. They're charging the highest season tickets in the league.
If I take your point about standings, but as a club, and certain clubs, i.e. Arsenal, can at least say, okay, we bring through some products. We play a particular attractive brand of football.
So what is
there's something there to give the fans. Whereas at West Brom, they're not going to be top eight. The football's dire. There's no exciting player at West Brom. And the one player they have got that's exciting is on the bench. There's nothing there. And there's been nothing there for a while.
No, I mean, for me, progress is all about where you are and where you finish, right? And West Brom, 6-7 years ago, were in the Championship. And Gabe is right. They were yo-yoing every time, right? They'd go up, they'd come up, they'd go down, they'd cut. They've stabilised. They've been in the league for like 5-6 years, right? For me, that's progress. They've gone from a yo-yo club, right? Like a Hull City, right?
Yeah, but who would want to follow that, Marv? Seriously.
But what I'm saying is, I understand your point. You guys are saying, let's take a risk.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
Leicester are an isolated case. They are an isolated case. We haven't seen anything like this in years.
Put them aside. Even if they're a freak, the likes of Watford, Palace, those teams, they're outside bets for Europe. They've overtaken
the spot. But there's nothing. Listen, if as a football fan, right, there is nothing worse. As I've seen it a long time as a Spurs fan, there is nothing worse than being mediocre when you know that your team, you're working in that narrow band of clubs that are going to finish from about 12th to 16th. That's boring. I don't care. You start a season thinking to yourself, well, you know, if you take all hope out of the equation as a football fan, then you're shot. It's so boring. Before the season's even started, you're like, what are we going to do this season? What is the point of this season?
Well, they're you know you're going to get West Bromwich. You know what I mean? They're not living
that's
in London.
That's got nothing
though,
to do with anything. What's that got to do with anything?
I'm just saying, you're going on like they're leaving their stockbroken job in the city.
What has that got to do with anything, though?
My point is, would I
you're
rather
saying a simple country folk should be happy with being a day?
What I'm saying is, if I live in West Bromwich, no offence to West Bromwich,
total offence to West Bromwich.
If I'm living in West Brom, not too far outside Birmingham, right? If I'm living there, what would I rather have? Yeah,
cut this bit out, Jordan.
And a way day at Chelsea, Manchester United, blah blah blah, right? Or a rainy day at Doncaster Rovers, right? I just think sustaining is not necessarily a bad thing. And they have taken risks. They did like Pepe Mel. They've done some random...
That was desperation. Yeah, that wasn't
they've
a
done,
risk.
They've done
they were
some,
desperate.
They've done some random stuff. I think Di Matteo was a decent appointment, but that fell off. Like, they've taken risks and then they've had to sack that manager because they're in relegation and then they've got somebody in who can steer them clear, right?
Well, isn't
and
that...
I just think that sometimes people need to know the levels. Like, there needs to be a mediocre in order to have a barometer of success, right? You need somebody who, you know what, they were below West Brom last time and now they're challenging for the league. There needs to be that. And I just think, yes, you're right, it can get a bit boring, but sometimes the prem is everything. For me, the prem is everything. Yeah. So the risk of doing it big and, you know, transferring from a mediocre team into a premiership, like, it don't happen often, right? So you guys, I mean, when you guys say we should take the risk, I don't know what you're looking for. Are you looking for them to change their style of play? Like even Husey, Husey at Stoke, it's taken some time and he's still hitting and missing, right? And, you know, if you said to the Stoke fans, oh, you know, we've got Afolai and thing, yeah, they'll be loving those acquisitions. But those acquisitions aren't easy to make, right? And Hughes has at least had some experience at bigger clubs. I'm just saying, right now, take the cash. The Prem, like, if you finish 17th, you are in the Prem next year. There's big money to be had, right?
I could go along with what you're saying if there was any kind of sign or inkling to suggest that next season will be different. If I'm a West Brom fan and I hear what you're saying,
but hold on, no,
why would next season be any different to this season?
So George,
with the cash.
When Leicester were fighting relegation last year and we all sat in this room, right? Did we think that Leicester were going to win the league? Potentially win the league next year? Well, of course we didn't. So I just don't think we can predict it. I don't think we can predict it.
What we did know of watching Leicester last year was that Leicester were very unlucky to be bottom of the league. Leicester were, you know, the difference between a Leicester and some of these other teams, because I was hearing someone going on about someone else the other day, or I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about Leicester and, you know, them moving from the team who nearly got relegated to a team who were where they are. The difference is that Leicester were not a team. I think they were talking about Aston Villa, actually, and saying, oh, Aston Villa, because they beat Norwich the other day. They're only now 7 points behind. And, you know, let me just say now, Aston Villa could still get out of it, you know. Aston Villa could get out of it. It's possible. But I'm not saying it will, but it could. But anyway, that was the gist of it. Aston Villa could still get out, or could they get out of it?
Yeah.
But the difference is between them and Leicester, because I think at this stage of last season, Leicester had only one more point than Aston Villa.
One more point than Aston Villa have got now.
But the difference is that Leicester were playing well. Leicester were playing well and losing, and they were unlucky to lose games. So when they actually started winning, it was no great surprise, because people were like, I saw Leicester 3 times last season, and every time it was like, boy, that was close. You know what I mean? They played us in the FA Cup, they knocked us out. And then they played us in the league and we won 2-1. And every game it was like, boy, they gave us a game, man. You know what I mean? So Leicester weren't a bad side, whereas Villa are a bad team. West Brom are just playing... The football they're playing is just rubbish.
Are they playing worse football than Villa, though?
Villa are a bad team.
I don't think so. I mean, the thing about it is, I've always said...
You can't compare them. Villa are in crisis.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is Pulis has made...
West Brom are a team, right? That Pulis,
he's made them difficult to beat.
The calling card of Pulis is organisation. I'm going to keep you up. We're going to play a certain style of football. It ain't going to be pretty, but this is what you're going to get. I guarantee you safety. That is great to a point. But what I'm trying to say to you is Leicester's not far up the road from West Brom, right? It's not far. If you're looking at Leicester and you're thinking to yourself, well, look at Leicester, they come up. If you're a West Brom fan, you're looking at it thinking, hold on a minute. They've never won the league. They have never won the league in their history, Leicester City. Last season, they were battling against relegation. Now they're at the top of the league and we're playing this rubbish football. I'm sorry, but as a fan, you can't tell me, Marvin, that sort. You can't look at it and say, oh, well, but we've got the Premier League.
Go on, Marv.
I mean, I hear what you're saying, but I'm not a grass is always greener sort of guy, right? So I just think right now, they are usual relegation contenders in the last 10 years, shall we say, yeah? He's made them difficult to beat. United are, what, a fifth, sixth type of team at the moment. I don't think we go to the Hawthorns and we're guaranteed 3 points. I don't think loads of teams go to the Hawthorns and get guaranteed 3 points. Yeah, they're difficult to beat and they're boring, but I just think if I'm a West Brom fan, I look at examples like the Charltons of this world and say, yeah, we need to kick on at some point, but the point isn't now. The infrastructure isn't there. We haven't got the security. I think Pulis was a very astute. I don't know why people think, you know, Pulis plays all this. Yeah, he plays boring football, but if I'm in the relegation zone and Pulis comes in and takes me out of it, that's good, Matt. That's good organisation. That's a good appointment.
Just to bring you back, sorry, to the original question about Berahino. So do you feel that they've handled that situation correctly?
I really don't. I mean, I'm not a massive side of Berahino fan, right? But the thing that annoys me, and it's not just West Brom, it's the way the media have talked about him. Like, oh, if a club get him, do they really want him in the dressing room? Like, I just think they've now attached a really toxic stigma to him. And, you know, fair play to the lad. He just wanted to move to London. He wanted to play at a big club like Spurs. It didn't work out and he sulked for a bit.
Okay, guys, so moving on now. I want to talk about Manchester and the two clubs in that city. Gabriel, let's begin with you. How much of a problem for Manchester United do you feel Pep Guardiola going to City will be? And is it too much of a statement to suggest that now there's going to be a huge power shift in that city?
I think the power shift started, well, big, you know, commenced when Sheikh Mansour came in. So I think, Pep is probably the icing on the cake of the thing. I don't think it's the start of the power shift. I think it's maybe a continuum of it or maybe a realisation of it. What I would say in terms of particularly United is that they are in, you know, it hurts me to say in front of Marvin, but they are that bigger club that I think their destiny is in their own hands. I think their next manager is really important in terms, not only in terms of now, but in terms of what they achieve in the future. So if the power shifts to goes to City, I wouldn't put it on Guardiola's head. I would say that it's a failure on the part of the management and the board at Man United, and they need to sort themselves out rather than looking at City and what they're going to do. But in terms of Guardiola, I think it is it's a big shake-up for the rest of the league. I think it will possibly attract players to the league that might not have otherwise have come as well. You know, people are talking about Messi, Pogba, or maybe even Stones going out there. Whether it's realistic or not, I don't know. But at the end of the day, that's the murmurings. We can only tell once he comes in. But yeah, I think in terms of answering your question, I think Man United need to look at themselves. If they get their house in order, they have the resources, the facilities, and the infrastructure to compete with City, regardless of whether Guardiola's there or not.
Okay, Ollie, just bearing in mind what G says there. Is regardless of what United do for this summer and the next, say, 18 months, with City having now Pep, the best manager in the world, most people would say, in tow, you would assume, and the money they have, would follow the best players in the world, regardless of what United do, is there anything they can do to kind of match what City are doing? Even if they get their house in order, appoint a good manager, bring in good players, they're still going to have an inferior manager to City, you'd think inferior players to City. Is it going to be the 3 years now of the red half being in the shadow of the blue half?
Well, I think that there's something Manchester United could do right now, this season. I mean, they're only 6 points behind Manchester City, and I still don't I still think they could catch Manchester City. What's to say that Manchester City don't even finish in the top four? Imagine if Guardiola turned up at Manchester City and they haven't got Champions League football. That is going to be one damp squib that he's walking into. And I think Man United could do it. I think Manchester City at the moment, unless they buck their ideas up, because there's no doubt that Manchester City have got the best attacking players in the league. But the way they play against Leicester was so bad at the weekend, and not just that, but the Liverpool game and successive games that I've seen them playing in, their season could likely implode from here. There's a chance that that could happen, I think, because I think it was a bit odd for them to announce that he was coming halfway through the season and basically make Pellegrini's position untenable. He looks like yeah, it's just like, if he loses a game, well, I'm leaving. If he wins a game, yeah, that's nice.
But the flip of that, I think the logic from what I'm hearing from City was that they announced it because every press conference between now and May, the first question is going to be, are you going to be here next year?
No, he's dealt with worse before, Pellegrini. I mean, how often has he dealt with, are you going to sign this player? Are you going to sign that player? Is this going to happen? Is that going to happen? I think that Manchester City were just put under pressure, probably from Guardiola, that, you know, he wanted it announced that he was the new manager.
Why do you think that? Why do you think he would want
because
that?
I think that he was probably coming under pressure in Germany because he announced that he wasn't going to sign a new contract, he was going to England. I think maybe he basically put pressure on them to make an announcement so that it didn't leave. I don't think it was anything. Listen, it was nothing to do with Pellegrini. I don't think Pellegrini. Do you think they actually care about Pellegrini? I think, you know, once you decide that you're going to get a new man in, right, you don't really care about it. All you're saying is, listen, your job's done here. Here's your money. Shut your mouth. Off you go. So I don't think they're worrying about Pellegrini's feelings. I don't buy that for a moment. I think, if anything, they're doing it to keep the new man happy. But anyway, the point is that I think that Manchester United can do something about Manchester City, which is to stop them finishing in the top four. And, you know, barring Manchester City regaining their composure and their form, they're not going to win the league. They're not going to win the league playing the way they're playing at the moment. You know, they don't want to defend. So I don't see how they can win the league. So Manchester United should be looking at that and thinking, well, we can still get in there at Manchester City's expense. So I don't really buy the power shift thing right now. I'm not really buying the Guardiola's going to come and it's going to all be different, because the Premier League is different. It is different. Mm. It's like nothing else that he's... Look at how Klopp's finding it. Klopp is like... He still thinks he's in Germany, I think, Klopp. Mm. Klopp's still got this thing of... What, you don't have a January break? You don't, you know, the kind of things that he's come out with, he's looked pretty naive over a number of kind of months, really. Yeah. You know, in amongst some good performances, but I think there's been some naivety shown about the Premier League. And I don't think Guardiola's just going to breeze into the Premier League and he's going to sweep all before him. He's not a big checkbook manager either, so I don't see him going and spending loads of money in the summer. So... I don't know if Guardiola's going to come and make a massive difference and Man United are going to be in his shadow. Mm. I certainly think that Man United need to buck their ideas up, but still, I'll wait to see what Guardiola does before I decide that, yeah, he's the best manager in the world, so it just likely follows that he's going to suddenly take everything, sweep everything before him, you know?
Marvin, from a kind of commercial and a business point of view, of Manchester United are a huge machine there, so off the field, are you as a fan concerned that off the field you might get left behind by City because the tension that's going to be on that football club, Manchester City, now with the Pep Guardiola going there again? I'm assuming there's going to be some top players going there as well. That in turn bring attention, that in turn bring sponsors and that sort of thing as well. You guys are known as the club in the Premier League, as the club that's, you're on the stock market, you're a business more so than any other Premier League team. Do you feel there will be implications on a business sense in terms of being left behind by City as well as potentially on the pitch?
Absolutely not. No, I think you look at our commercial entity and it is significant. And I don't even think City are number two. I don't even think they're number three, right?
And you put Pep in there next season and Pogba and Lewandowski in that team.
Yeah, but that's not going to change things overnight. They might get more sponsorship, but I don't think Joe Bloggs in, I don't know, China or Brazil is going to say, right, they've got Pep now, so I'm going to stop supporting Man United and I'm going to start supporting Manchester City. Maybe the new kids that are growing up might think, oh, I need to pick a UK team, I'm going to pick Manchester City. But for me, history still has a place, right? And there's the reason why Manchester United is such a significant commercial machine is because they have upteen trophies behind them over a significant period of time. And they've acquired that through the commercial machine and generating their own revenue. There hasn't been, Martin Edwards wasn't blessed with lots of cash. The Glazers have leveraged debt to buy us, right? So the money that we spend is money that we generated. Gabe's spot on, you know, in terms of if you want to do power from a financial perspective, it's not going to come from the commercial side. It's going to come from the fact that their ownership is significantly wealthy, right? But I don't think from a power perspective, whether you know, all those kids that you saw that have Manchester United and had, whether it be Cantona, Ronaldo or Giggs on their back, are now going to miraculously change to Manchester City. I think they're going to have a bigger reach. I think, you know, you can see the work they're doing in New York, in the US. They think the MLS, they think America's a growing market, and they've got partnerships out there, as have Chelsea.
And they've got Chinese investments.
Yeah, and they've got Chinese investment. But for me, am I worried? Am I more worried Pep is here? No, I was worried as soon as the Sheikhs took over, right? I was worried as soon as they built a purpose-built stadium just for their youths, right? That has its own tram stop in Manchester. I was worried then. Pep makes it even a bigger problem, but I think Manchester United fans are worrying more. I don't think they're now worrying. I think whether it be Pellegrini or Mancini, they can
see
that.
They're on the rise regardless.
That money talks. I mean, for me, Manchester United, it's not a competition about being the biggest club in Manchester, right? It's a competition to return to where they were, which is a team competing for the Premiership. Whether Manchester City are their biggest rivals, or whether it's Spurs, or whether it's Chelsea, Manchester United have prided themselves on being the biggest club, both from a commercial perspective, a fan base perspective, and a performance perspective. I think the first two are still there, but they're all connected to performance, and their priority shouldn't be Manchester City. It should be returning to where they were.
Okay, all right. I asked Gabriel, I think, last week, and the guys that were on the pod last week, regarding Pep, what would be defined as success in his 3 years at Manchester City? I'll ask you two, Ollie and Marvin. Start with you, Ollie. What do you feel he has to do in his 3 years, and he walks out the door in 3 years' time, for his time to be deemed a success at Manchester City?
I think he needs to show that he can win the league and win it convincingly, and also he needs to make them a force in Europe in the Champions League. They're both things that they haven't done up to now with all the money that they've had in the club. They haven't they've won the league, but they haven't won it at a canter. They haven't won it, you know, without taking it right to the last day or taking it to the death. So, you know, and then maybe trying to do what Ferguson did and trying to not just win it once, but win it and retain it. And also, you know, Champions League as well. Yeah, I think that they need to show that they're a force in the Champions League, and they haven't been able to do that yet.
It's just in one word. Do you feel that if he doesn't win a Champions League in that 3 years, he will be deemed a failure?
I think so, because I think that he hasn't done it at Bayern Munich. Well, we don't know what's going to happen the rest of this season, whether he'll manage to get it before he leaves. But I think that, again, I think if you go to the big clubs and you have the backing that he's had at Bayern Munich and now he's going to have at City, I think that you should win the Champions League.
3 years. Marv, what's success for Pep in 3 years?
I think he's got to win the Champions League in those 3 years. Mm-hmm. Really, really simple for me.
If he wins three Prems in a row but no Champions League, is that still a failure for him?
Well, it depends on how they perform in the Champions League, right? If they're winning three Prems in a row, that's substantial. But if they're not getting to the semi-finals, then I still think it's a failure, right? Because, as we've seen, the Prem is there for the taking, mm-hmm. whoever you may be. With the amount of money he's got, you'd expect him to win the Premiership. City have won the Premiership without him,
Premier League.
So they've won it without him. So, you know, you look at Barca, you look at Bayern, they'd won leagues without him. Mm. For me, if he is to be considered a success, you know, he's got to do better than managers that have come before him with the same resource. Both the managers who have been there since the cash has come in, I'm talking about Mancini and Pellegrini, have won Premier Leagues. Mm. They've struggled not only to win the Champions League, to make an indent into it.
Mm.
So I think if he came along and won that in the first 3 years, then, you know, he can be crowned. He can walk away with his head held high. Praise him the way everybody does.
I don't think it can be just about the league, because the thing is that England needs a serious force in the Champions League, because for all of this money and all of this, you know, commercial activity out there, global activity of the Premier League and everything to mean anything, they need to be making some sort of dent in the Champions League.
Mm.
Now, for years, Man United and Chelsea have kind of led the way. Both of them teams have fallen back in recent years. Someone else needs to step up now, seriously, for the good of the Premier League, for everyone to be able to say, yeah, the Premier League is a serious force in Europe. You can't have a situation like that and not be able to get to the latter stages of the biggest competition in the world, really, yeah. Isn't it? So I think that it's now time for City, if they're going to do anything, they need to start showing, or Guardiola needs to take them to another level in the Champions League, where they are competing with Barcelona and Real Madrid. And that's not just for Manchester City, but that's for the good of the Premier League. Because unless they do that, I think the Premier League is...
bit of a laughingstock, isn't it?
I think it's a total laughingstock. Because if you've got all this money floating around, you ain't got one team that can challenge Barcelona, Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, then what's it worth?
Mm. I think there's something to be said about youth development as well, George.
I was thinking as well, because they've spent a lot of money on their academy, haven't they?
Mate, have you seen it?
I've not seen it, but I've heard a lot about it.
It's outstanding. Mm. It is very impressive, right? I mean, their ground that they play at is better than some League One clubs, right? It is, wow. Right? So, you know, I think, and I've been one of the main people, right? When we talk about Barca and the players that have come through, people have talked about, you know what, Cruyff and those guys who put the youth infrastructure in. He was just part of that machine. It would have happened anyway. I don't think City have brought through a lot of young talent as things stand. So if he can win the league, win the Champions League, and also improve that infrastructure, so better coaching, whatever, that you then see some product come through where they're not having to spend 40, 50 million because they've got a Nacho, for instance, then I think that would also support the argument of this guy is the real deal. I don't know. Do you think there's some big young talent coming through?
I thought
the youth teams would be quite good.
The youth team's good, and
but United's youth team are above them in that league.
I don't think that's true.
We're second
bottom. I heard
United.
We just battered Norwich 7-0.
Man City beat you 5-1.
They beat us, but they're not. What I'm saying is. I mean, that your youth team over.
I think you're 21 points behind Man City.
People take packings all the time. But what I'm saying is, have we seen... what you're saying is it's happening already, but it's one thing to dominate. I mean, Chelsea's dominated that area for ages.
And they never bring anyone through.
So my point is, because I don't think he could just go there and affect change in 3 years, right? I think if by year three, somebody who he either cherry-picked from Spain... or, you know, fingers crossed, has come through, an Englishman has come through and is now playing with the likes of Aguero. I think that would be significant, because the other managers, and I still think it's harsh to say this because the other managers didn't have time to do it, but I think that would be a statement of saying, look, he's not just spending cash. And I think you said it, he's not really a massive checkbook guy. You know, he takes Thiago wherever he goes in his pocket and whatever, but other than that, he works with what he's got.
He does.
So if he can do that, then that would be considered quite significant.
Another box ticked. All right, guys, last subject I want to get on to is Gary Neville.
Poor old Gary.
Gabriel, I want to ask a question. Do you feel that he is losing credibility as a manager and a returning pundit with his current performances as Valencia manager?
And as a manager, he...
i.e. future jobs, I'm talking.
Yeah, because it's difficult to say he had any credibility when he started there, to be fair, because he'd never managed before. He'd done some good coaching for England, from what I understand. I always said, we talked about it when it first happened, and I said Valencia is one of those jobs where it was difficult to see. I mean, the last manager was just outside of the top four. Apparently he got sacked not because of performances, but more because he wasn't getting on with the hierarchy and the fans weren't a big fan of him. And I just said at the time, similar to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, it's a job that you have to take, but maybe it's an almost impossible job to do well at, because Valencia's, from why I watch the Spanish football, Valencia's level is the top four. And if they're just 4 or 5 points off it, sacking their manager just seems really harsh. And then in saying that, he's been an absolute disaster there. And you know what? I have a lot of respect for him. It's so painful to watch him week in, week out say, the performance have been good. If we play like that, we're going to win. He came out today and said, we have to win on the weekend. I'm putting that pressure on myself. We have to win on
the
weekend.
He said after the Barcelona 7-0. He said that about and they lost on Sunday to Betis. He's saying the same thing every week now.
I'm taking the pressure. And I saw one of the funniest memes that I've seen this season was, you talk about going back to his punditry credibility, was he said something like, you know, I know Barcelona are good. Yeah, if my team loses 7-0, you know, I'm taking a look at myself. And then he goes and loses 7-0 as well. So overall, it's just looking bad. I take him back on Sky. Would I take him as the next Chelsea manager on this performance? Hell though.
Okay, Ollie, do you think the critics are being too hard on him? Or do you think that he was maybe too arrogant in thinking that he'd go from the pretty much the bottom, i.e. no manager experience, to managing the third biggest team in Spain?
Neither, really. Are the critics being that hard on him?
Yeah, the last week they've been...
In Spain, you mean?
And some over here as well. I've seen some reports, some returns over here that have really like... I think that stems from the fact that they feel that he was a little bit, let's say, arrogant in thinking that he could just jump the queue. He could go from nothing to managing a big European club and think that he could do a good job. Whereas a lot of managers in their first jobs do the groundwork and they don't feel that he's done the groundwork.
I think it's easy to say that, really. I think that Valencia was going to be a hard job, whoever took over. And, you know, they got issues there, haven't they? In terms of the way the club is run. And I think that they've got that super agent, I think Mendes or whatever, who, you know, he kind of gets all the players he wants, you know, who his players on the books there. And I think it would be a difficult job whoever went in there. Having said that, I don't think it was the perfect job for Gary Neville to start his managerial career.
Why do you think he took it?
It's bizarre. Well, to me, I think it's bizarre that you take over a non-league club like Salford, right? Go and make your mistakes at Salford then. If you've bought the club, right, I know it's low down the pyramid, but even so, if you want to just go and try a few things, see how you work out as a manager, why don't you go and do something like that and just work your way up and do it, you know, do so. What's the point in buying a club and then deciding, oh, we'll make a documentary about it and we'll all stand on the terraces and like, oh, we're all supporting our team and all the rest of it. And you don't think for a moment, let me go and see if I could actually manage this team or get involved in the coaching side at this club. Because Valencia is a really big club to go to, and it's going to be a hard job whatever way you look at it. But to go to a club like that that's going through a bit of a rocky patch and you don't speak the language, I just think that's...
In response to your point there, I think I read an article about a month ago that was trying to figure out the same thing that you're questioning there. Why not go to maybe a championship club? Even Derby last summer were looking for a manager and go there, and the counterpoint was that if he goes to Derby and doesn't succeed, it's harder then to move up, whereas if you just start at the top and you do well, you can be in that mix of possible England manager, United manager, another top club. But if you struggle at a lower club, where do you go from there? That was the kind of gist of the piece.
Yeah, but I just think that if you go to a lower club, you can't look at it like that. If you want to be a manager, you've got to start somewhere, haven't you? I just think you're asking a lot of yourself to go to a club like Valencia and go to a country where you can't speak the language. That's not a good start. Everything in that job is about communication. If you can't communicate with your players and you've got to go through other people, then you're really at a
and his USP is that he's a very good communicator.
Exactly. Difficult position from the start. And as Gabe said, he just seems to be making the worst mistakes you can make. To come out in a press conference, as Gabe was saying about today, I saw that today as well. He comes out in a press conference and says, we must win. What if you don't win then, Gary? What if you don't win on... you know, let's be honest. Everyone last week said, you can't lose to Betis. Betis are a club who are really struggling, right? And no one's been losing to Betis. You can't lose this game. And you go into a game and you lose, You can't then turn around and say, yeah, well, we can't lose the next game. It's like, Gary, shut up. And not only that, but he's actually talking about himself in the third person as well. And I always think that is a you're on a rocky road when you start saying, well, Gary Neville, and you know, no, it's you, Gary. You're Gary Neville. You can't turn around and start saying, yeah, well, Gary Neville has to do this. I just thought, oh, you're in trouble now, mate, because you're talking about yourself like you're, you know, in the third person. That's wrong. But I just feel that I don't think that he can't, you know, you can't recover from this. I mean, Alan Shearer took Newcastle down and he's back doing punditry and no one goes on about that, do they? You know, Ruud Gullit does the punditry and he's had bad times as well. Managers have bad times and things go wrong. I think it's just that it's so kind of, you know, it's just, he's high profile, isn't he? But I think that it was the wrong move for him. He should have gone somewhere else to begin with.
Marvin, do you, just another kind of almost repeating the question to Ollie, but do you feel though that if he returns to Sky next season, and he probably will as a pundit, people are watching it. His big thing was he'd tell it as it is. He'd call out managers, players, whether they're United or not. He doesn't really care. He'd tell it as it is. And 9 times out of 10, he's probably right most of the time. But how can he now go back onto Sky TV and say he's not playing for that guy, that manager, he should be doing this, when he's doing such a bad job as manager himself? Do you feel that, again, his credibility is maybe not gone, but tarnished slightly? Because it's easy to call out people, but then the easy response would be, well, yeah, what did you do?
Well, I think we could have said that now, George, right? Because I think if you look at him pre-Valencia, when he was telling it how it is, there were a lot. I saw people on Twitter going, you've never managed a club. You don't know what it's like getting the players to play for you, blah, blah, blah. He's done that and he's failed spectacularly, right? But at least he rolled the dice. I mean, what I don't get is why everybody keeps questioning why he took the job. Everybody knows he has a long-standing relationship with Lim. Lim owns the club. He's also heavily invested in Salford and the acquisition of that club, right? I think he owns more of the club than Gary Neville.
He does, yeah.
He was like, listen, Gary, and Philip Lim is a fan, right? Before everything, I know he's like a billionaire, but he is a fan. Just like us, he sits there, he watches Gary Neville tell it how it is, and he thinks, flipping hell, this guy really knows what he's talking about. He's England's number two coach or whatever. He's thinking, I'm in a bit of a bind here, and nobody they're bringing to my door, I think, can do what Gary Neville's can speak as eloquently and as
incisively. But surely speaking eloquently and being a pundit.
Yeah, absolutely, George. But George, it's like, it's almost like me saying to you, you know, you're a journalist, right? And it's almost me owning a newspaper, right?
Match the day. Yeah, saying, come up
yeah.
Match
and it's
the
like
day
me saying to you, look, the journalist I've got ain't cutting it, and everybody I've interviewed ain't cutting it. I've watched you interview people fantastically. Can you come and do me a favour? It's mates patting each other on the back. It's terrible. It's a terrible position to be in, that you're getting the job because you're mates with the owner. But that is essentially what it is, right? I don't think... We all know it's been terrible. I don't think anybody can sit here. I mean, it's interesting for me because I'd sort of become quite disillusioned with La Liga. You know, Ronaldo's going to bang a hat-trick this week. Messi's going to bang four that week. Neymar's going to do it. And I've actively been watching Valencia games, hoping for the best, right? I'm a big Gary Neville fan. But at the end of the day, I read his book and he said he would never go into management. He said he saw what it did to the Paul Linces, the Roy Keynes of this world. He doesn't think it's for him. And I remember reading that thinking, yeah, Gary, stick to that because you're a great pundit. He's now done a favour for his mate. And I think he's pretty much, in my opinion, prevented himself ever getting a top managerial job in England. I think it's as simple as that, right? And I think...
Sorry, you think that he's ruled himself... No one will touch him now.
I think the work that is now required, bearing in mind he seems like a soul that didn't want to be a manager in the first place but rolled the dice on it, I think the work that is now required for him to now get a Manchester United is a lot of work, right?
He's never going to get that job.
For him to talk about a big club or England, he would now have to take maybe a West Brom as an example.
But do you think he could get a Man United though?
Well, I mean, honestly. I don't think Ryan Giggs could get a Man United, but he's in the hunt. So you can't say Giggsy will definitely get it and Gary Neville couldn't pre-Valencia, right? Because he was obviously doing some great work with England.
Yeah.
And you don't know what you mean flipping McLaren got the job at England. You just don't know which way the wind's going to blow. But I don't think one of the things is I need to make a clear differentiation between punditry and manage and being a manager, right? Because I mean, we've seen some awful managers pop up on our box talking about what somebody should be doing. I mean, I've seen Paul Jewell all the time. You know what I mean? Like, it's you know, you could be a, shit manager and get punditry work.
That's harsh on Paul Jewell. You know, he brought quite a few clubs through.
I think it's a little bit harsh.
Look,
well.
I mean, I'm seeing. I mean, Shearer's a good example. I mean, Rudhullet really struggled. There are people who have been managers, and as far as I'm concerned, have not been great managers, and have ended up on our box. Like, it's not a thing. Like, it's a rotation. And I think we can't, because he's done awful in, and there's no denying, Jordan, it is awful. I'm telling you, those players are not playing for him. I've watched Negredo miss more chances than I've ever seen. You know what I mean? And I just think we can't just, because he's been so shit, we can't just say he can't come back onto Monday Night Football. I mean, we've got Jamie Carragher on there. Like, Gary Neville could get relegated three leagues and still come back and be more insightful than Jamie Carragher.
I'll pick up your two points. So you said that he could, he'd done a fantastic job at England. He coaches 3 days a week every 3 months with England as the assistant. So I would question the work, how much credibility, how much quality of work he's doing there. And secondly, you said, oh, we might be able to get a West Brom. Well, I would say, why is he worthy of even a Premier League job full stop?
Well, I mean, I guess my point is, the reason why I think he's I just think Gary Neville is not. You can't just base Gary Neville on the last 6 months.
No,
right?
I'm not. But even pre Valencia, you wouldn't have said he should get the West Brom job 6 months ago.
And I used a great job at England. It was probably, I need to sort of check myself there. I think what he's done at England, from what I've seen and the way he's speaking, he's clearly integrated into that setup and been a good bridge between Hodgson and the players. It's none of that, you know, Stevie Mack and all that sort of buddy-buddy that McLaren had. I think he's been able to draw the line and say, look, you're playing shit, or this is what we need to see from you, and be able to report to Hodgson. That's the impression I've got, right? I also think, I mean, West Brom might have been a bad example, but Jude, I mean,
I thought you thought Pulis was doing a great job.
I just think Premiership, I think Premiership, you make it seem like the Premiership is like some
Premier League.
Sorry, the Premier League.
What's your problem with that, Jordan?
It's not called the Premiership. It's rugby. It's a rugby league.
It's not called the Premiership.
I just think you guys are going on like the Premier League is like every manager that's managing in there we've heard of and has a solid track record. I'm talking about Swansea and stuff like. People roll the dice, and I don't think somebody from 15th down.
They don't roll the dice on guys that have never managed before in their life.
Well, no, he has, Jude. He's done shit, done it. And I just think to myself, I use that as an example to say the whole reason why Gary Neville took this job is because he was thinking big picture. He was thinking, if I can get this club to finish fourth or third,
United might look at me, England might look at me.
And he's done badly, right? But, you know, if he chooses to continue down the managerial road, the doors aren't closed.
Okay.
But he would need to do a phenomenal amount of work. And I'm talking 5-10 year project to get himself back to where he was 6 months ago.
Yeah,
he's done it. Personally, I would love to just see him back on Monday Night Football. We all, even if you hated Man United, if you hate Gary Neville, there was some sense there. And we're not talking like punditry's moved on. Henry's still there. Carragher's still there. The time has been quite short. So all this stuff about can we take him seriously? Can he come back? Absolutely he can.
All right.
It's just a case of maybe he should lick his wounds. It's a bit of a Ronda Rousey thing. Just come off social media. Just love your family for a year and then integrate yourself back slowly.
Come back slightly.
Because people forget stuff, right? I mean, until Ollie said it, I'd forgotten about Shearer and how shit he was at Newcastle. Yeah. You know what I mean?
People well, that was forget. Harsh. Well, didn't he, wasn't he there for like six games or something? The last six games, they were pretty much down anyway, from what I remember.
It's a bit more than six.
Was it more than six? More than six?
He walked, though. I mean, he didn't say, I'm going to stick around and get
him
back.
It wasn't long. It was 6 to 8 games. But yeah, like Marvin said, he never came back, did he? And the thing is...
And now he sits there criticising Newcastle weekly. So your comment about can can Gary Neville come back and criticise? Well, Shearer does it every time. Like, Shearer is the most critical
of Newcastle.
Of Newcastle. Yeah. And he took him down, right?
Listen, he didn't have that many games, to be fair to him. But the point was that when he went into Newcastle, there was this big thing of like, it's Alan Shearer, he's just going to walk in there and it's all going to work. And it just didn't work, did it? He just walked in there and he thought,
this is too big for me.
The funny thing that really hurt is that Balake was on one of those Sky shows and he was saying that the manager that got sacked before Gary Neville was averaging 1.88 points a game. Gary Neville's currently averaging 0.5% per game. And if Gary Neville was in charge at the beginning of the season, Valencia would be bottom five, and there'd be 5 points adrift.
Wow.
I mean, there's just no... Jude, when that happened, I left the room. I felt... I cringed. I was like,
that's
wow.
This guy,
this is career suicide
right now.
And I think the Spanish press, I think he's also done an injustice to... We always criticise managers for not going abroad, right? And we criticise players for not going abroad. And then people like McLaren get up there, do a press conference, talking some weird accent. And we're just like, this is embarrassing. And I just think if there was a manager willing to roll the dice in La Liga or in the Bundesliga, I don't think anyone's going to roll the dice on them. You know what I mean? I think he's hurt it for English managers. I just want him to come home and just love himself. Like sometimes... Jordan, we're watching a real slow death right now, and it's painful. It's really, really painful to watch. I don't think anybody, including Liam, Gary Neville, even the Valencia fans, thought it was going to be this bad. And I've watched him, and there's times when the press are asking questions the press would ask, and he's like, "Don't put it on the fans. The fans ain't saying that." I'm thinking, do you think the fans are going home and thinking, let's give him five more games? They ain't doing that, Gary. Do you know what I mean? He's like, don't put it on the fans. It's really like, I've been in the media and the media do this. And I'm thinking, Gary, you ain't won a game. You've won zero games.
And a friend of mine, he's been Valencia a few times, said to me that the Valencia fans are known for being really hardcore.
Yeah.
They're hard.
I'm surprised he hasn't had like a horse's head on his doorstep. Do you know what I mean?
Just final point, Gabriel. Marv mentioned Sky there. The reporting of Neville's time at Valencia, I've noticed has been quite nice in inverted commas.
Yeah.
That, you know, they'll say, I saw a tweet from someone that said that they'd said Neville's won 1-6 or something, as opposed to someone else that might have, it'd been four draws and a defeat.
Yeah.
Because it's Neville and it's someone that they want to bring back.
Yeah.
They're being quite nice with him.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that? And is that a bit of a black mark against Sky in terms of calling it as it really is? He's having a shocking season and they're kind of... They're spinning it so that it's looking like he's not doing as bad as he actually is.
Yeah. I totally agree, Jord. I mean, but I don't want to just put that on Sky.
British media.
I just think that's the British media in general. You know, when people have a point to prove, they will, they'll try to spin it in ways. I think Marv talked about it previously with Rooney and Diego Costa. I want to talk about it a bit with Goose Hiddink as well. Because everyone is quick to say that Goose Hiddink is unbeaten, but he's like won like two games, and one of them was like MK Dons.
It's like everybody likes Goose Hiddink, and he's a nice guy. And
or because a lot of people want to see the demise of Jose, and now that Goose Hiddink. So whenever we have a half decent game, oh look, it's so improved. Now that Jose is gone, this has happened, that has happened, and I'm looking at the game and I'm thinking, we play crap, and everyone's going to like, there'd be such big improvement. Guys like Graham Lasso and Glenn Hoddle, who Jose's given it to a few times.
Yeah.
They want to see. So I think the thing is, there's too many people in the media with personal feelings towards other people, and I can't differentiate between that when they're given their opinions. And some people get a very easy ride, and some people get a tough ride.
Okay, all right. That was kind of in a weird backwards way, kind of our Pundit Watch for the week. Thank you very much, guys, for this week's contributions to the pod. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, FFP_11, and subscribe and join in on the fun via the iTunes Library Football Fans Podcast. Until next week, everyone, peace.